This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Online police surveillance of social media has uncovered that Malaysian children, some as young as 14 years old, have fallen victim to cyber sexual grooming involving foreign paedophiles. Sharmila Sekran, Director of Child Advocacy Group, Voice of the Children, joins me now to discuss the dangers lurking online for our kids and how we can keep our children safe both online and offline. Sharmila, were you surprised when you read the news about Malaysian children falling victim to cyber grooming crimes?
Not at all, unfortunately. It's sad to say, but it was only a matter of time. It's when rather than if, in the case of Malaysian children. I don't think parents are sufficiently aware or take sufficient heed and notice to the fact that children are victims and there are predators out there preying on our children. And very often we think that children from particular social groups would be more at risk than our own children in perhaps the more affluent and urban areas. So we do not actually think that predators will come into a home. So I don't think they protect the children enough, you know, parents.
Are you unsurprised because of these measures of protection or also because of, I guess, the online space that's permitted it, that's allowed it?
Absolutely. The online space is a more vast, a wider area for people, for predators to lurk and for children to be exploited and to be where children are vulnerable and, you know, we don't know how to protect them. But certainly that greater space does lend itself to greater abuse. But I think if we have the right kind of measures and awareness, we can do a lot to curb the amount of abuse or the kind of abuse that's taking place. Also, the fact that we need to teach and educate our children as to how to protect themselves in such an environment.
Are the reports and statistics of these crimes conservative at best? Are they kind of just the tip of the iceberg?
I don't really know myself, but I would suspect so. Very often, this kind of cyber sex, any kind of sexual abuse, is often underreported. There's a lot of shame. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of fear for a child to report when they've been sexually violated. Also, in the cyberspace, there is also an element of them not even being aware that they've been violated.
Could you define cyber sexual grooming? So what exactly are we talking about?
Well, grooming, any kind of grooming, is where a child's trust is preyed upon. A person takes time to basically talk to the child, gain the child's trust, before exploiting the child. And this can take a short amount of time. It can go on for a long period of time. Very often, predators like this would throw a net out, in a sense, you know, contact many children. They would do a lot of research into the children that they are targeting. They would throw a net out and see whoever they catch and who they think would not reveal the predator's identity. And then it starts very innocently. It's about gaining trust. It's about being your friend, in inverted commas, before it becomes something more perverse or sexual in nature.
What are some common social sites where grooming can happen?
Anywhere. It can happen mainly social media. So we're talking about Facebook, we're talking about Instagram and sites like that, Snapchat and places like that. But usually it's in a kind of a online social setting, chat rooms, where predators lurk. But it's actually a bad thing. But what I wanted to say is the fact that really with the cyber world, a predator's identity is more easily hidden. They're more anonymous than if it were in the physical space. So, you know, children can easily be led astray, thinking and believing that they're befriending or have been befriended by someone their own age, when it's actually someone much older and someone who wants to harm them rather than really be a friend.
How do groomers pick their intended victims? Is there a, you know, are there ways to identify if your child might be particularly at risk?
You know, any child who is actively in active in the social setting is at risk. Any child. What groomers do look for are triggers, if you like, that identify the background of the child. So, for example, if a child posts kind of more sexually explicit stuff about themselves, for, you know, provocative photos, for example, then they are more at risk. Children who perhaps suggest that they are lonely and abused or lack friends, lack some kind of parental guidance and support, absent parents, anything like that, would also make them more vulnerable and more at risk. Basically, like I said, you know, what they do is they cast a wide net and they just try and bring in as many fish, if you like, as they can. And these are the children who would more than likely respond positively to them. What they obviously don't want are children who indicate that they are aware in terms of online predators. They don't want children who show or reveal the fact that they talk to their parents a lot and, you know, my mom says this and my dad said that and family holidays. You know, these children tend to be more secure within a family and therefore are more likely to talk about what's going on in their lives. And that would put the predator at risk. So they would generally try to avoid children like that. But yeah, it's, you know, children who reveal a lot about themselves.
How do they build this new friendship or relationship? I mean, is it as simple as just saying, hey, I want to be your friend? I mean, what is the process by which you end up having this belief that, oh, I have a new friend and I'm going to go visit this new friend? And it could be somebody, you know, just that you should never go near.
Yeah, it's as simple as, hi, can we be friends? And like I said, it's something that happens online. So the identity of the person is hidden, or the real identity of the person is hidden. They often have a pseudo identity. So they would have targeted certain children. They would have identified, for example, where the child stays, where the child, as in the geographical area, where the child goes to school, whether the child has many friends or few friends. They would have built up a profile of these children and using the information based on that profile. So you would, for example, know that the child likes certain kinds of music or certain kinds of activities. And they would utilize that information and build up an identity about themselves that would then be appealing to the child. And then it's a case of, hi, can we be friends? This is who I am. This is what I like. And the child goes, hey, kindred spirit. And the child responds, me too. And then that kind of chat starts, the friendship starts. And, you know, these people spend a long time grooming children. It's not something, I don't think we should be deluded into thinking this is going to be a online, you know, a one-off kind of reaching out to a child and bam, it happens. No. What would happen is it would be built up over a long period of time. They will try to make the child dependent on them, look forward to communicating with them. You know, they would cause that kind of emotion within the child. And then the child is groomed, and then the child is more likely to do whatever they're asked to do.
When it comes to grooming, what is the ultimate aim of it? What are these online predators trying to achieve?
It's their own gratification. It's something that's going to give them the thrill, whatever it is. Obviously, more often than not, it's something to do with some kind of sexual perversion. So that's basically it. So as long as they manage to get the child to do what they want, then they are happy.
When it comes to that word, sexual perversion, sexual abuse, so for example, even if the child involved never met the offender face-to-face, but the groomer still gets them to perform sexual acts over a webcam or to send them photos, for example, would this still fall legally within the bounds of abuse?
Yeah, it is exploitation. Even if someone were to show a child pornographic photos or pictures, that is already abuse. So it is anything that violates the child's space and sensibilities. And like I said, very often, depending on the age of the child, depending on the maturity of the child, very often children are not even aware that they've been violated or abused until much later when they look back and realize that, hey, that should not have happened. But by then, in some ways, it's too late. So, yeah, exploitation can happen online as much as in the physical space, but getting children to do certain acts, to even say certain things, is abuse and violation.
I'm speaking today with Shamila Sekaran, Director of Voice of the Children. We're talking about cyber sexual grooming and how to keep our children safe from it. Up next, we find out what are the telltale signs that a child might be being groomed online. You are listening today to Live and Learn on The Big Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me, Shamila Sekaran, Director of Voice of the Children. We're talking about how to keep children safe from cyber sexual grooming. How can you tell if a child is being groomed online?
Well, there are different ways. There's no single answer. A lot of it is to do with changes in the child's behavior. So it's very important that parents and carers know the child well, at different stages of the child's life, and identify very clear changes in behavior. One of the things we have to remember is that as children mature, anyway, they change. You know, teenagers often are slightly more problematic and a little bit more withdrawn from the family, and because they're trying to find their own space. So one of the triggers or identifying changes in behavior is when a child does become more withdrawn. But then you have to balance that with the fact that, well, are they just being a teenager, you know? So there are other things like, for example, children becoming more clingy, children trying to say something and share something but not actually saying it, and adults having to be aware and conscious and listening to the child to read between the lines. Even things like they have regressive behavior patterns, like they start sucking their thumb, behaving as they did when they were 5, 6, 7 kind of thing, rather than 12, 13, 14 years old, you know, sucking their thumb, bedwetting, things like that. Sometimes children start acting out certain inappropriate sexual behavior in public or even within the family. All these are trigger signs that suggest that the child, there's something not quite right and needs to be looked into, or basically the child needs to be spoken to try and find out what it is that's caused this change in behavior.
From your work with Voice of the Children, do you have personal experience working with children who have been subjected to these crimes?
No, Voice of the Children is purely an advocacy group, but we do work, but we have come into contact with children who have been, who are now survivors of abuse, sexual abuse. But we do also work with other NGOs that do work more directly through pet play therapy and things like that with children who have been abused.
Most young children now have access to the internet. Most children are digital natives. They know, you know, they expect every screen to be a touch screen. They live on the internet. But do you think that children, you know, might be doing this without yet having the skill or capacity to assess right from wrong and to understand that you can take things, you know, far too far on the internet?
Absolutely. You know, we are in a very strange time now because for the first time, I think, in the history of the world, children know more than their parents when it comes to the internet, use of digital gadgets, and things like that. So for the first time, parents really need to run to keep up with their children when it comes to this kind of information. And parents must, you know, take an interest. They cannot say that, well, we don't know, we don't understand, we leave it to our children. They must take an interest in these, you know, how the space, you know, the internet and digital space, mobile data space. But that said, children, I think, are a lot more aware now than before about needing to protect themselves online. But I don't think many children have sufficient maturity to know and understand when they are being targeted. Now, if a stranger came up to them and propositioned them, they would know to say no, because you've been taught to not to talk to strangers, and they wouldn't. But for some peculiar reason, when a stranger approaches them on the internet,
it's fine.
Exactly. And a lot of it is to do with the fact that they actually are more trusting and more believing that when someone says that they are 12, the same age as the child, or 15, same age as the child believes that, and they do not know how to distinguish when someone is pushing certain buttons, getting them to do certain things. One of the things that groomers do is they also, at some point, talk about secrets. They try to teach, get children to not reveal certain things, and they say, this is our little secret. It's between you and me. And, you know, children from a young age always love these secrets with their friends. I can't tell, you know, they'll whisper to the mother, but can't tell anyone else. And here you have that being mirrored or mimicked in the cyber world. And children, in that sense, need to be taught by the parents what is a good secret and what's a bad secret. The fact that no secret should be kept from a parent. So you can tell either one parent. If you don't want to tell both parents, it's okay, but you must tell one of your parents. There are good secrets, like, for example, a surprise birthday party, but there are bad secrets, like, for example, a complete stranger or even your friend revealing certain things to you about themselves, or enticing you to reveal stuff about yourself to them. Those things should not be kept a secret. So, you know, children need to be taught this and talked to about all this. I think children also need to be taught or made aware, and the discussion needs to happen at some level as to, how do I put this? As to the fact that they cannot reveal too much information about themselves. And that there are certain kinds of information that they may reveal about themselves that could help someone target them and identify them very directly and specifically. Things like, for example, they should turn off things like GPS on the internet.
Their location services.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. You know, turn all that off so that they cannot be found as to where they live or the geographical area of their home. Because then it's very easy for a groomer to say, hey, I know your street. I live two doors down or in the next street, you know, that kind of thing. And thereby building a trust again. So it's things like this that need to be discussed with children. And children, and what parents need to do is to set certain rules for the child. The younger they are, the more stringent the rules. Like, for example, I know someone who says no mobile phones in bedrooms. You can only use it in the living room, or even then, not really. When you come in the door, mobile phones go into a basket at the front door, and they're there until you leave the house. So they're not allowed to use the mobile phones, and hence a data plan within the home setting. Things like ensuring that the internet or a computer which has access to the internet is always in a public space, like near the dining table or area that parents are always kind of walking by or hovering around. No such thing in the bedroom, where a child can kind of retire into secrecy. And that's one of the other triggers when a child becomes more secretive about his or her online behavior and even friends.
Which again is hard when you're a teenager, because teenagers are secretive.
Exactly. But like I said, there are other triggers, so they must be looked at as a whole. And one of the things about most teenagers is actually, and I'm talking about teenagers being teenagers and generally good people, not trying to be difficult, but just trying to find themselves, as opposed to a teenager who has found him or herself in trouble. So I'm talking about a teenager out of trouble. Yes, they may try to be secretive, but at the end of the day, they always want their family. At the end of the day, they may act cool, talk tough, but at the end of the day, they want to talk to mom and dad. And if parents are able and willing to set aside that time and say, okay, dinner time, no sullen faces, this is what's going to happen, and it's just 1 hour of your time, which parents and children have to share with each other, you'll find that they do come back and say things and talk about what's going on in their life.
Researching this topic brought up some very scary stories. There's a famous case from the UK where a 14-year-old Breck Bednar was lured to his death by 18-year-old Lewis Daines. Lewis had been grooming Breck over the internet for several months through an online gaming community. He eventually got Breck to go to his flat and he slashed his throat and he sent pictures of the body to friends. Now, what's scary about this, besides the whole thing, is that in this situation, Breck's mother had been suspicious of her son's friendship with Lewis and had limited his access to electronics, installed parental control, forbade him from using the same server that Lewis hosted. So she'd done things. She'd put things in place. And in December 2013, she even placed a call to the Surrey police expressing concerns around online grooming. How important is it to properly fund and train police investigations for offences involving children and to share this information and to just have a system where if a parent is reaching out in this way, we have people, a support system ready to step in and help?
I mean, there are many tragic stories, such as, you know, the one you just talked about. And there are a lot of things that we can put in place. I think, you know, it would be nice to be able to say that we can cure all ills of society. Unfortunately, I don't think we can, realistically. But there are a lot of things that we can put in place. And training of the police, training police very specifically to deal with, one, the whole online nature of the offences that are coming up now vis-a-vis children, but also in terms of victim support, parental support, and when I talk about victims, I'm also talking about the family, is vital, is important. And it's important for the police and welfare to also step up and say, yes, this is a problem and we need to find a solution for it.
Right now, what is the government doing in terms of online safety for our children?
Well, they have set up a cyber unit and specifically a child cyber sex unit, more specifically. At the moment, from what I understand, the unit kind of trolls the internet and tries to identify where the loopholes are, who the regular offenders are, for example, and working with police. The thing about online cyber sex is that it is non-geographical. You can be, you know, in a different country and be committing offences in Malaysia. So they have to work very closely with police in other countries to, one, collect the data and the evidence, but also work closely with them in terms of being able to catch the perpetrator and prosecute. And I think that is vital, as well as sharing of information.
We've seen Indonesia taking a stand against child sex abuse by introducing chemical castration, while other nations are taking a more rehabilitative approach. Right now, what are the punishments or legal repercussions of being convicted as a child sex crime offender here in Malaysia?
I think a lot needs to be done in terms of enhancing our laws, very specifically at the moment. Statutory rape really is the main thing. But when a child has been offended online, there is no rape per se. And therefore, the offence is a much lesser offence. And they get away with committing almost rape, but not quite. So I think we need to enhance our laws.
Right now, then, when it comes to cyber crimes against children, so there's the Child Cyber Sexual Investigations Unit. Once they do pick up a paedophile, for example, what happens then? I mean, what laws can we use against this person if it's not rape?
Yeah, our laws are very limited.
Right, so that's that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's quite depressing. What are the challenges in identifying and then prosecuting cyber criminals? Aside from what we've already talked about with that geographical, the issue of geography, the issue of anonymity, I'm sure those are amongst them.
They are, but, you know, there are ways of still doing the investigative research into identifying people through their ISP addresses and things like that. Of course, it does get more complex because sexual predators tend to be also very intelligent people, and they have ways and they know how to block access to themselves. You know, they have these sites that kind of bounce off other sites, so it's not a direct locating of them. But it's not impossible. It still can be done. But generally, it's about getting children to reveal the fact or to tell say that they've been exploited or they've been targeted, and getting the information and the evidence from that process. One of the things I think many people are concerned about, because it happens online, is if I report it, what's going to happen to the family? What's going to happen in terms of our online security and safety? Are things going to be said and done? And then, of course, the fact that your computer could be taken away, which a lot of people seem to place a lot of importance on without considering the fact that a child has been abused.
Would a sex offenders registry represent a step forward in combating this issue? Would it help?
It definitely would. I think what they need to do is also identify potential offenders. Some people, there are people who just commit online offences and don't take it any further. Dealing with them is one issue, how we deal with them and rehabilitate them. There are those who start online and start almost innocuously, but then go on to become real predators in the physical world. And identifying them would be a challenge, and they too need to be dealt with in the right way. But certainly a sexual offenders registry is important in terms of letting them know that they're being watched, that they have to be a lot more careful about their activities, and most importantly, about not allowing them to come into contact with children.
How can we foster global cooperation to ensure that children are safe? Because as you pointed out, this is a transboundary issue. This is not something that is just happening in Selangor or in Malaysia, for that matter, or even in Asia. You know, you could be being abused by somebody who is not even in the same continent as you.
Sure. Which is why the police need to have very strong exchange of information. And I think what they also need to do is speak a common language and have the same kind of database or transmission of information. Very often you find, even with, moving away slightly from what the topic we're discussing now, but even with terrorism, when we find out that a country has been bombed, then we find out that, some of the people who had done the bombing were already on a watch list or had been picked up and let off. So it clearly forces within one country, much less internation, are not speaking the same language, are not sharing the right kind of information with each other, are not paying attention to the information shared sufficiently. All that needs to be addressed, because the same kinds of problems that arise and exist within that setting also will arise and do exist within the setting of the child cyber offences.
Where do you think we can work together to close off, as policymakers, law enforcers, advocacy groups and parents, to come up with solutions to keep our children safe?
They're very clear solutions. We need to teach children about sexual activity. Sex education is a must. Children need to be taught about safety online, both through schools as well as at home, through the homes and their parents. And the government needs to take a huge part in making parents aware of what kinds of steps they can take to protect children. So it's not just, for example, having parental controls, but also parents checking up on children's phone usage, financial transactions, who their friends are. In the case that you mentioned in the UK, the mother was very concerned. She'd raised a couple of flags, but she still allowed, or somehow this boy still managed to go to someone's house. And parents need to not let their children go to homes or visit friends that they have not first met. So it's things like that that could also be put into place.
For more information on Voice of the Children, you can visit voc.org.my. Shamila, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Shamila Sekaran, Director of Voice of the Children. We've been talking about how to keep children safe from cyber sexual grooming. You've been listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.